there's no music if you have nobody to play it with, so take care of your body first.
You getting into the gym and you lifting weights and working on muscles it's physical therapy for the benefit of your playing.
The truth is, nothing works like just taking care of the simple stuff. Diet, exercise, and sleep. Take care of that and you'll be fine.
Join us as two musicians and fitness coaches discuss strength, wellness, and fitness in relation to musicians, artists, and performance.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tuned and Strong podcast. I am Angela McHewson of Music Strong, joined by Dr. Jen.
Dr. Jen Cabas, soon to be Dr. Jen Cabas May. Just got to get the legal paperwork done of Tuned and Tone Performance.
Jen just got married last week. For
anybody who
doesn't know. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And we have a special guest today because we are joined by the functional musician, Austin Panzer.
Hi, Angela. Hi, Jen.
I apologize. It's Dr. Austin Panzer, isn't it?
Doctor. Oh, it's not doctor yet.
Okay.
Ouch, tugging at my heartstrings. It's all good. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm so happy to dive into this conversation and see where it leads us.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. If you don't mind, can you just tell us a little bit about you and what you do and how you got into this, you know, for people who don't follow you on Instagram and don't have a clue who you are?
Yeah, sure, would love to. So, my name's Austin Panzer. I'm the CEO and founder of The Functional Musician, where we help musicians live and perform without pain. And I got into this line of work, into the health and wellness field, because back in my graduate school degrees, went to Indiana University for my master's to performance diploma and finishing up a doctorate there. So 8 years so far, it's been a journey. But 3 out of those 8 years, I entered a pretty debilitating injury cycle. I did my master's in tenor trombone. And then when I went to my performance diploma, I switched over to bass trombone. It was actually really cool because the only difference, literally only difference, was it was the same model, same type, just in bass trombone form. So it worked out really, really well. But I was doing everything. I was like playing 8 to 10 hours a day. I was in jazz band, orchestra, brass quintet, preparing for an audition and a recital, an excerpt class, on top of lessons every week, and some other, chamber stuff going on. So it was pretty crazy. And I loved it very, very much. But as you can imagine, that was not sustainable at all. And it caught up to me pretty quickly. It was like in the span of like 1 month, just 1 month. It was like a couple of weeks after my birthday, actually, now that I reflect on that. But it's like I was in jazz bands, couple weeks leading up to it, I was experiencing numbness and tingling, some sharp pains, and some of that fire sensation in the forearm. But it wasn't anything like serious. Like I was just like, cool, like obviously I'm playing too much. Like let's back off the reins a little bit. But it was just too much playing in a day. And I also I enjoyed going out with my friends and drinking beer, and I probably wasn't sleeping well. And I don't even know if I was like really on top of my hydration. So like all of these factors just kind of like accumulated and developed, and I was just sitting in jazz band and brought up my arm and boom, like my blew out my forearm. And it started this like 3-year injury cycle where it's like, it went to the forearm, my left shoulder, my right shoulder. I had huge knots everywhere on my back, but like, I'll never forget being in a massage therapy session, first one. And she's like, are these knots? They're the size of golf balls. Like, what do you do for a living? And I was like, yeah, I play trombone. And she's like, oh man, these things are just so rough. Like, I don't even know if I can focus on these today because they're so tight. So she actually ended up focusing other places too. So it's just like, it was really discouraging in that sense, but, really intense, really, really intense. And during that journey too, I like tried a bunch of different things. I actually did rehabilitate my forearm. Like I got back, it took me about 7 months. I played an Ergobone. It's like a metal springy stick I can put my trombone on. And I ended up playing that in orchestra and jazz band. You can probably find pictures of me on the internet doing that. But in the summer, I was like, cool, like I'm gonna get back. My forearm feels good. Let's ramp back up. And I was only playing like ramped up to like 2 hours a day. And all of those habits that I've lived with my entire life came back pretty quickly. And as a result, all of that tension and pain, which no longer occurred in my forearm, it went to my shoulder and I blew out my shoulder and then went to the other shoulder. And during all of these things, I went to doctors who, Angela, you can, I know you can relate because I've been following this podcast as well as your blog for a long time, but you know, like three or four doctors told me like, you should look at other career paths. Yeah. Like, come on, other career paths after, you know, like already being in school, post-secondary education for like 6, 7, 8 years. Like,
yeah.
Oh, super annoying. Anyway. So I ended up taking some. Peeve. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just said it's a pet peeve. I hate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like,
cop out.
It's like they weren't really meeting me where I was. They weren't really trying to hear me out. They were just trying to get me in and out the door as quick as possible. It's like they didn't even want to truly help or connect with like me as a human. But like I went to Alexander Technique. I was experimenting with Feldenkrais. I did yoga 3 times a week, massage therapy, chiropractor, physical therapy for about 1.5 years. And all of it like helped in its own unique way in a lot of different ways, but there were still a lot of pieces missing for me because I still kept injuring myself. I still kept falling back in my old habits and I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And honestly, like after doing that and investing in myself and my health, trying to figure this out while balancing a doctoral education on top of that, you know, I was just done. I was just like, this is stupid. This is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to be happy. I deserve to be happy. So this is what I literally thought. I was like, okay, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to tell my family until I have a backup plan. So I'll be a personal trainer. It's something I've always thought about doing. It sounds fun. I like going to the gym. I like helping people. It seemed like it would be really, really fun. So I ended up getting certification. Yeah, it is fun. Totally. It is a blast. And actually, Angela, you're the one who inspired me to pursue those certifications in the first place, because you're the only one out there, at least at the time that I was aware of, that was actually doing anything related to musician health and wellness in terms of strength building, stretching, exercise, just anything in general. So I was like, cool. Like, I love all of the concepts she's talking about. So I ended up going to the National Academy of Sports Medicine for, a personal trainer certification. Boom, there you go. And then what really inspired me too is the corrective exercise portion, because that's something that really resonated with me, just as terms as like, I wonder if that could kind of like fix my stuff. Yeah. And you know what? It did. It helped so much. And I couldn't believe it. I was just applying it to myself to see like what concepts, like just trying to like master it so I could pass the test, because that is a hard test. That was like one of the hardest tests I've ever taken. Yeah. It was hard. I was like, all right, here we go.
Same thing. When I took that test, I thought, this is the hardest thing I've done next to my master's comps. This is insane. It is crazy hard. Super worth it.
And I kept telling myself, like, if I can pass early music history, I can pass this test. that was my motto for like 3 months when I was studying for it. I was like, this is insane. So kind of like fast forward a little bit, as I started to make improvements and progress with these different concepts from NASM, I started getting back to a point where I could play without pain a little bit, just like 15 minutes at a time. But you know what? That was enough for my creative self in my heart to give me more hope. And I was like, maybe I won't drop out of school. And then I ended up continuing along and got up to a point where I could actually practice a couple hours a day. And then I got to my first recital. It was a chamber recital, and I actually got through without my body just like screaming at me. It was tired. It was fatigued, but in a really good way, you know, after like a really good like cardio session, and you're just like, oh, I'm so exhausted, but man, did that feel good. And, it's been uphill ever since. And when COVID started, I've been like formulating how exactly I wanted to like help other people and musicians, because I believe giving back is a great way to just connect with other people. And you can't keep this information in when it's when the information about there for musicians is just so young.
Not there.
It's almost non-existent. So it's like, we almost have like a duty to the bigger self and the bigger world, our community, to help and put that information out there. So when COVID happened, I was like, you know what? It's either I'm going to sit around playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey and put in like 150 hours into this game, or I can do something meaningful and productive and like help people and actually pursue something I've wanted to do for like 3 or 4 years. And that's kind of how like the functional musician came about. And it's been a journey. But I'm really grateful to be able to help other people through their own unique experiences and their own journeys, and just help discover what health and wellness means for that and what kind of life other people can live. And I'm sure you feel the same way. And I'd love to just kind of hear your take on kind of your approach to that as well. But that's like the long, short story of how I got to be to where I am today.
That's super awesome. And I think we had a phone conversation a few years ago, didn't we? Back when you were at IU, was it?
You know, we probably did. Honestly, the time at IU, being a grad student with how much was going on, it's a little foggy for me still. I'm still kind of processing everything that happened, believe it or not. And it's been like a year and a half since I've been there.
Sounds about right. No,
it's been like a year. But yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Like, if you were the only one, like I said during my research, if you were the only one who was doing this type of thing, we probably did have that conversation, 100%.
I think so. I remember having a phone conversation with somebody who played trombone who was looking into NASM, so I think it was you. This was years ago, like 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Now it's full circle.
True story. Jen, pipe in here. I don't want to talk over you the whole time.
Oh, no, it's fine. That's totally fine. I'm like, I've got some things to backtrack to, but I don't want to derail everything that just happened. So like, you guys let me know if I'm trampling that direction too. But you said a couple interesting, I mean, you said many interesting things in your story, which I think are very, very relevant, you know, and it's stuff that Angela and I have talked about before too, but there were a couple that I found particularly interesting. I don't know if you've come across this yet where, sometimes people are a little bit resistant to what we are wanting to talk about. Have you experienced that, Austin? Yeah.
Okay. Oh, 100%.
And I think it ties into when you were talking about when your injury was developing, you were saying, well, you know, you had this problem and like, well, it wasn't that serious. And then you blew out your forearm. I feel like that, well, it's not that serious thing is part of why we run into so much resistance. You know?
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, yeah, it's normal. We all have, and especially when it's like, oh yeah, well, I have this, but it's not an injury, right? Like, oh yeah, I get some tingling here and there, but you know, I'm playing like 8 hours a day. So that's normal. Like,
yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's like that narrative of like waiting until things, you know, things mm-hmm. are completely wrong to take any action for yourself or do anything to help.
We kind of, if we like what you're saying here, I feel like we're kind of like cars. You know, when we talk about, you know, you have to have preventative maintenance on your cars, but we don't view ourselves as worth as much as our vehicles, because you wouldn't drive your car until the engine exploded and then get the oil changed. But what do? With ourselves? We wait until we break before we take ourselves seriously. We've got check engine lights on, and we've got tire pressure monitors blinking at us, and we've got light bulbs out, and we're like, ah, it's not that big a deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And just to kind of give you a different analogy too, if we imagine ourselves as like a computer, you know, the software that we have in our computer is going to run our computer. And if you really want to prevent viruses and malware and adware from just slowing down your computer and putting in some very destructive programs, you run security checks, you do malware scans ahead of time, so your software is running efficiently. But if you don't do that over the long term, after a year your computer just like completely destroys itself and you're like, what just happened? I just bought this a year ago. You know, same thing with the car, like 3 years mm-hmm. of not getting an oil change, like, you know, goodbye brand new Lexus or whatever car that people drive. You know, crazy.
Yeah.
And I think something that I've been thinking about this a lot, and I don't mean to talk over both of you. I tend to be a huge talker, so feel free to interrupt me at any time. But I think like part of our job is to start reframing the term serious. What does that mean? Like serious being like the symptoms happening, that's pretty serious. The firework has already been lit, as opposed mm-hmm. to an injury happen, which is also serious as well, but rather reframing our health as like when things are happening, that's time to take action, as opposed to when you break down, that's the time to go to a hospital and get medical care. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Yeah, it's very difficult to, from my experience, it's been very difficult to convince people. Like, if you're getting medical treatment, we've already failed on several fronts. Like, if you're getting medical treatment, something has gone wrong several times. And, you know, there are freak accidents. And that's the reason why we have medical care to assist us. But if you've got the symptoms already, and like, oh, well, but it's just like, that's great that you know that you're playing too much. That's fantastic. But if you're not doing anything to address that, like, even if you can't play less, okay, but you're having symptoms, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
It's not as college.
Yeah. And as college students, like, the last thing you want to do is, oh no, one more thing I have to do. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Or like, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna, I don't know about you. It's just kind of awkward with three people, you know? I don't know about y'all, but I really don't understand why we don't teach this as part of the college curriculum. You know, like, what, when you were talking about, do you get kind of resistance from other people about what we're doing? I mean, I hear yoga, I hear stretching, I hear running, Alexander technique, Feldenkrais body mapping. I hear that stuff all the time. But strength training, people are like, ah, that's for other people. We don't, I hear this so often. It's like, I feel like this is one half of a circle and you can only stretch what's tight so long before, if you don't strengthen what's weak or what needs strength. I mean, strength, and this is two sides of a coin, and you can only go so long before something is not going to work. And I don't understand why there is that resistance to this and why it's not being taught as taking care of the whole musician, because you can't play your instrument. I mean, there's this whole thing. This goes back to something we talked about earlier, but when you're injured or when you have situations where you are in pain, I don't know how many musicians have told me, well, my teacher just told me I wasn't practicing enough, or I'm not good enough, or something must be wrong with me if I hurt. Like, we don't blame, why are we blaming ourselves? No, that's some serious ignorance going on here. We are doing ourselves a great disservice by we're not taking care of people. So I don't understand why this isn't part of, kind of like, we're in the dark ages with this, just like with entrepreneurialism in music. It's only now being seen as, quote, a new thing. It's not a new thing. It's like the thing we all have to do. And the music schools are so far behind.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship has been happening for as long as humans have been alive.
Yeah.
Bartering. You know, that's entrepreneurship in a way. You want this rabbit leg? Give me your pelt.
You know? And that's how we've had to survive for, like, the majority of us for a long time has been, you know, you have to be able to market yourself. There's only so many, you know, structured jobs out there. And most of them, you still have to do something else. Like, I don't personally know a professional orchestra musician who is not also teaching. You have to do both. It's just how it is. And unfortunately, and I'm going to kind of disclaimer here a little bit. These are my opinions on the higher education system and a lot of the problems I've seen being around it and in it to some degree for so long. It just takes forever for curriculum changes to get approved. Unfortunately, a lot of the people in previous generations, in my opinion, who have made it to the current teaching jobs when, you know, what we're doing wasn't available. It was barely being researched, or it had been started. You know, the research started, and then it was like, well, what do we do about it? Well, a lot of the people then who got through in kind of, when we're talking about, I know this is going to be more of a reference for me than other people, but like Bulgarian weightlifters back in the day, and a lot of times, a lot of those Eastern European and like Chinese lifters, it's, we're going to put you through this impossible program. And if you survive, then you survive. And if you break, we don't care because we want winners. And so they end up with very naturally physically gifted movers, you know, who just have good movement patterns to begin with. But that doesn't mean that they didn't have other great lifter potentials. Maybe somebody who could have lifted more just couldn't survive the system. And so I feel like there's a little bit of a parallel to a lot of these jobs. Not all of them, clearly, not all of them, because there are some great educators out there in higher education. But there are a number of them that I've met and I've kind of listened to and talked to, and my impression is like, okay, well, you got this job because you happened to be gifted in what you do without needing assistance with relearning movement patterns, that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with your students who do need assistance. You just happen to be lucky enough to survive what was available to you at the time.
Yeah. And I think,
go ahead.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, I'd also like to add in there are teachers out there who are really stuck in their own ways, who have a particular way of teaching and put all of their students in this box. And if the student doesn't fit the box, that's on the student type of thing. Mm-hmm. And they even have whole entire syllabi created around students' expectations to fit into the teacher's mm-hmm. ideal box rather than meet mm-hmm. the student where they are. Mm-hmm. And I think, and there are all those other teachers out there too, regardless of generational gap or age, that constantly invest in their education still. Constantly invest mm-hmm. in developing skills that are needed to help their students or needed to help move their career in other paths that could supplement or complement their teachings. And I think it's these teachers that can meet the students where they are, respectfully look for resources if they don't know on a particular topic and point them in that direction, rather than being like, I don't know, this works for me, it should work for you. I think that's a big paradigm shift that I think, you know, people like us are working on changing that narrative, and we still have a long way to go. But I'm definitely hearing more conversations about this just from a pedagogical standpoint. And, you know, until we have people who are willing to ask for help, willing to grow, or willing to, help their students and be humble enough to be like, I don't know, let me go research it. Let me go figure this out. Let me ask someone for help. Then I think we're going to keep getting stuck in our own ways and stay in this dark age that Angela referenced to a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping maybe next generation will get what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I'm seeing it. And I think COVID really kind of brought a lot of that to light, where people had all this time to study and get like nerd out about this. And now they're making, I don't know, guys, but I have seen more people, especially on Instagram, really, but more people talking about this, you know, strength training and fitness for musicians in the last year or two than I have. So I started this 10, 11 years ago. And back then there was nobody talking about it. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. that's cute. Good luck with that niche. I'm like, what? You know,
right?
Like, oh, yeah. I admire your enthusiasm. That's cute. I was literally told that. I'm like, wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Step on back. Like, mm-hmm. But you know, like in the last couple of years, I've seen the surge. And like, I think, Austin, didn't you do a podcast with Rusty Osborne a little while ago?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, like he's on this train, and Mike Schwartz, which we're going to interview in a while. Do you know Mike?
I don't know Mike, no.
Oh, you got to know Mike. Okay, Mike is the rock doctor, and now he's a pirate, and we'll talk about it later. But there's this surge of people in the last couple of years that have really just taken this to heart and really run with it. And I'm so glad to see that this is happening. So, I mean, like, the conversations are happening, and people are interested, and so I think it's definitely about to take off. Like, with PAMA, I haven't joined PAMA yet. I've been thinking about it forever, but it's been cost prohibitive for me for a while. You know, like, you're a fitness professional, right underneath medical professional. I'm like, that's a lot of money. And what am I going to get? A magazine? I don't know. I don't, you know, I'm looking into it. But I'm now seeing people referencing PAMA a lot more and making it more approachable, which I'm really excited. Performing Arts Medicine Association, for anybody who doesn't know. But yeah, really just glad to see that. So, yeah, I still think there's resistance out there, especially in the medical mm-hmm. community. But I'm glad to see this surge.
Yeah, it's a long, slow ramp up. getting anything to change is long, slow ramp up. I mean, like you said, we've all been having to do this entrepreneur stuff for how long? How many decades now has that been a predominant thing for us? And we're just now really seeing the music and business degrees really start, like, since I've been in college is when I saw it start to be a thing. You know what I mean? So I think the health thing is going to be it's going to take us a little bit, but I'm hoping between PAMA being referenced more often, between people going, you know what, I don't know, but let me send you to this person who does. And I know that I'm forgetting their acronym right now. The organization that accredits colleges of music.
NASM.
Okay. Yeah. They're starting to require at minimum now the basic, you know, like here's a one page cheat sheet on things you should know and ear protection. And like, okay, it took how long to get that to be required? Wow. I'm hoping that that is the precursor to, okay, if you want accreditation, you need to be able to actually help your students. Somebody there needs to know what they're doing. I don't care what your methodology is. Somebody there needs to know what they're doing. And I think like you were saying with one of the good things about shutdowns is like, you've been doing this for 11 years and nobody was there when you were starting. I've been doing this for a couple of years and I didn't know there was anyone else out there until the last year. And all of a sudden it was like my Instagram blew up and I've had the Instagram for a while, you know, and like, oh, there's this person doing this thing and this person doing this thing and this, but like, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
You know, after a while, you're like, I'm talking to people who don't understand what I do. And I can't explain it to them because they're so resistant and there's no one else doing it.
So. I didn't mean to hijack that thread, Austin.
No, it's okay. I totally agree. But I mean, even though there's a lot of stuff on Instagram right now, in the grand scheme of things, I still feel like it's only a step, in the right direction. And something I've noticed is actually the surge of mental health awareness over COVID as of the physical health. And I'd be curious to get both of your takes, Jen and Angela. So looking into the future, when auditions do come back, when orchestras are returning to full-time schedules, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be a surge or a decline or an increase in performance-related injuries as we go back into this life that we've had to shift for a couple of years, maybe even another year and a half?
It's an interesting question. I think it depends on the person. That's what I think.
It's hard to say a blanket statement. I mean, I know a lot of orchestras that have not stopped at all, which I think is amazing. They just went outside and they went in big spaces and they did weird things, right? But then I know other musicians, especially here in Nashville, they haven't done jack. You know, if I'm thinking of these musicians that are like, I'm not just thinking about orchestras, but like Broadway musicians. Well, Broadway's our main drag here. So like all the honky tonks, and these guys play 4-hour sets with maybe two breaks. And sometimes they have sometimes they'll do a double. So they'll play 8 hours or do a triple and do 16 hours a day.
That's insane.
And repeat the next day. Oh, and by the way, guys, they work only for tips.
What?
Yeah. No, welcome to Nashville. It's and so the only reason that hasn't changed is because all these new people who want to break into the business will agree to play for free. So they can't change the model.
Oh.
Yeah, it sucks. So if you come to Nashville, drop those $100 bills to the band because they're not making anything otherwise. And they're playing 16 hours a day. So these, insane. But I know. But I'm thinking about these guys who, like, you know, they haven't played much. They've kept it up a little bit, but now Broadway's open. Honky tonks are good and they are back to it. And I think there's some people that I know who've kept up playing. Like there's one person I could think of he'll play 4, 5, 8 hours a day just practicing because he doesn't know what else to do, right? But then there are other people who haven't done anything. So I think it can go both ways. I mean, I think that there could be a surge of injuries from people. Mm-hmm. I know anytime I have crammed for an audition, when I've gone from nothing to a whole lot, I get injured every single freaking time. I mean, it's just not what we're supposed to do. You have to ramp it up, right? But so I think if anybody's in that boat, that's going to happen. But I mean, if they've also been, if we go back to immediately that level that we were at before, doing the same, how many hours of rehearsals, how long is the concert, how many days a week, what extra stuff are you required to do, and you haven't been keeping up? Yeah, absolutely. But if you have, at some point, I think also maybe no, because you might have taken this time, musicians might have taken this time to realize how much pain they were in, because they're now not, because they've taken a break. You know, so I think it could go both ways.
I think it also depends on a little bit that mental health stuff, Austin, that you were mentioning. Because we think like, okay, the people who are doing well, who are just like, I just play and that's how I live. And, you know, like, great, they're going to be fine. I'm not worried about them. And if we're talking about the people who are taking the time to go, okay, this is my chance to get some rest, take care of myself a little bit, you know, you kind of see what I need to work on. They're going to be fine. But if you tend towards depression, which a lot, very common for musicians. If you tend towards depression, and your gigs have been taken away, and potentially your students have been taken away, and you feel like, well, what do I have to work for? You know, those people are going to be higher risk. So if you're listening to this and you are one of those people that, and most of you aren't going to admit it to anybody else, but if you can admit it to yourself, now would be a good time to start finding a good reason to do something that you love. Get out and move, even if it's just like, you know what, I like sunshine, I'm gonna go take a walk, instead of just sitting here and being like, gigs aren't coming back, no one's calling me, I'm just gonna watch more TV, you know. Like, now would be a good time to start doing that, because if not, like, all of a sudden you get calls and you're just like, let's go, you know, but you haven't touched your instrument in a year, that's where we could run into some issues.
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for shedding some light on that. That's exactly what I wanted. I wasn't looking for a blanket statement, just some insights to kind of how both of you were approaching that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to mental health, I mean, May is Mental Health Month, I think, right? So I think it's important for us to not just be more aware of, like, talking about our mental health, but also doing something about it, you know? Mental, and this doesn't have to be mental illness, but, you know, being able to talk about, you know, today I'm not okay. And that's okay to say. Like, I don't know if you guys saw this, but I made a post yesterday, just like, this weekend, I was done. I hit burnout. And it was, last week I did a whole course with the Army. It was a resiliency course. And the last day was a suicide awareness course. So it was 5 days, 8 hours a day in front of this computer or on the phone being talked to. I could, you know, interact somewhat, but it was a lot of information, and it was just a lot about being resilient, which is ironic. But I mean, by the end of it, I had tried to keep as many clients during that time. So every lunch break, I was trying to train a client, trying to go here and trying to switch from that to training and back and forth. My mush. And I got so I don't know what the heck I was thinking, but I got to Saturday. I'm like, my to-do list is this long, because by the end of each day, my brain's like, and you're done. But I have to do my taxes. My brain's like, no.
If I didn't have 5 days of workshop, my brain would still be like, you have to do your taxes. Good luck.
They're still not done. So I tried to do them this weekend, and I tried to, like, ride my bike, and I tried to do all the things I love to do. And I just felt like my nerves were on the outside of my skin. Everything was really loud. Everything was bothering me. It was just too much. And I went, you know what? I've got to take time for me. And you know what? Yeah, business is hard, and this is difficult, and whatever. And it's okay. I think it's okay for us to admit that. And I put out a post yesterday about it's difficult to be an entrepreneur. It's difficult to start a niche and to try to make change and do all these things. And it's not always pretty. And it's not always easy. And it's not always like, look at my six-figure business, and look at how pretty I am, and look at my beautiful shots. And, you know, I don't have time to figure out reels right now, okay? I can't do one more thing, you know? I don't want to schedule a Facebook Live. I don't want to, it's too much. And it's okay to start talking about when things get too much and how that makes you feel. And to show that there is a whole, the reality is, it's not all puppies and sunshine and rainbows. It's okay. And that's how we start bringing awareness to what is reality. Reality is not social media. What is reality when it comes to your mental health, your state of being, and making sure that it's okay for us to talk about when we're overwhelmed and when we're stressed out and what that looks like, because it's not the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's how we start to change the whole narrative there. But it's okay to talk about when it's not okay.
Totally, 100%. And everybody's business is going to look different. Everybody's musical journey is going to look different. Mm-hmm. Everybody's injury is going to look different. Like, everybody's unique in their own, you know, not sound woo-woo, but like special way. It's true. So it's like, you know, comparing yourself and just accepting your journey and working through those emotions and those feelings as they happen is a really powerful way, I think, to live, even if it may feel like crap sometimes. And I totally relate to you with the burnout. I've been burnt out more times than I can count. And that stuff hits you hard, real hard. But Angela, you made it. 5 days of crazy scheduling. Like, go hammock and read a book. Like, you've deserved it. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, but my taxes still aren't done.
And your taxes, yeah.
Today.
You'll get there. You'll get there. It's okay.
Anyway. It's okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's just because you've had when you're burned out doesn't mean you have to live in a state of burnout, but you do have to understand what that looks like for you and understand how can I take care of myself in this moment. And then, you know what? Today's a good day. I'm feeling better about it. I'm excited. I'm ready to get back into it. But I had to take the weekend, not do what I had planned because it wasn't right. I don't care that the weather was perfect. I could care less about riding my bike. You know, I didn't want to do it. I took a nap. I got in a float tank. I did a sauna. I did stuff I've never done, you know, just chill. I didn't do chores. I didn't write. I didn't nothing. Mm-hmm. And that was what I needed. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, you know, woo-woo and rose petals, bonbons and whatnot, but it was, I can't do the things that, if the things that bring me joy are not bringing me joy right now, that's a big hello. You got to stop. You got to not, who cares what's expected of you right now? You got to not do that and take care of you. And you got to figure out what it is that you need to do to take care of you.
Yeah.
It's gonna look different for everybody.
I think that might tie into, I know I had this experience, Austin, too, when I got really, really hurt was, tell me if you had this too, actually, is what I'm trying to say very poorly.
Okay.
That you were talking about, okay, well, I'm just going to quit school and figure it out after you got hurt. Like, for me, that's exactly what she was just talking about, where it's like, I love my clarinet and it wasn't fun anymore. It was like, okay, well, this thing that I identify so heavily with, I identify so heavily with my self and with my happiness, is now a source of something that drives me crazy and makes me angry, makes me, you know, hurt, makes me feel less than. Like, it's really easy to just be like, you know what? I'm done. I want to run away.
Totally. That's exactly how I felt. And I didn't really go too much into that. But yeah, I mean, every time I would look at it, I wouldn't listen to music. All of the pieces I loved, I couldn't do it. It'd make me cry because I'd be like, I can never do that. Oh, what a huge egocentric driven thought process. But it's like, even music that just like you listen to and you're like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't listen to music. I found myself listening to white noise most of the time, just to like numb myself out from those thoughts. And, you know, not gonna lie, I also consumed a lot of alcohol during that time. You know, I was that person who'd be at the bar probably every night hanging with the same friends just so I wouldn't have to confront that reality. And as soon as those friends graduated, as soon as, you know, I realized kind of what was going on, that's when it kind of hit me and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I probably could have saved myself some time, as you could have too, if we would have just come to that realization, you know, earlier. But hey, it's a learning experience.
Exactly. And I was like super dedicated to the timeline. I had been totally unrealistic, mind you, but I had this timeline in my head. I'm going to do this by this age and this by, like, if I hadn't fought it so hard though, and stuck to it so hard. And like, I've got some students I've worked with, some people I've worked with. It's like, it doesn't matter if it takes you an extra year, who cares? It's okay.
Yeah.
Age is like, just you need this extra time. And you're going to be better than, like, okay, you've got this rival right now who's like the person you're competing with for first chair, but you're hurt. Great. Give me another year. Let's do what needs doing. And that person won't be able to touch you. I've heard that person. You're fine. Like, not totally. To be that. There's plenty of times when that is not the case. But one of them in particular was like, just take the time now and you will never have to worry about that again. Like, but I don't think if I hadn't fought it so hard and spent all that time, like, well, no, I have to do this right. I don't think I'd be able to say that to a student. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So shifting gears, because I know we got to go here in a couple minutes. Okay. Austin, tell us about some of the things that you do.
So for me, you know, like I said earlier, I help musicians live and perform without pain. But what I really do is I work closely on an individual basis, kind of like you do. And I work all online right now because of COVID. But basically what I do is I meet someone where they are, and I develop a health and wellness plan to get them back on track so they can just live their best selves. And the musicians that I work with do experience pain on some level, whether it's chronic pain, maybe they worked through an injury in the past and things are still happening. But I've found that approaching it in a holistic way has been very beneficial for a lot of people. You know, we're talking not only the strengthening, but we're talking about, you know, regular movement. We're talking about daily health and wellness habits, getting high quality deep sleep, what you put in your body actually matters, staying hydrated, the stories you're telling yourself. And more importantly, I think something that doesn't get talked about too is the mindfulness of it, because it doesn't matter how much information you have. You can go out there and you can research all of the health and wellness information you have, but if you don't have an implementable plan, if you don't have a plan of action combined with actual action, you just have information that you can't necessarily use. So part of what I do too is to provide accountability to encourage people to actually take action towards creating these healthier habits and rewriting these neural pathways of what they actually want to be doing. And that can be very, 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 very hard alone. You know, that's why I kept reverting back to my old destructive habits, no matter what happened. But having that accountability and encouraging people and reminding them of the bigger picture and helping them discover their big why and ways they can show up for themselves, even if they don't feel like it, you know, showing up for yourself on a day where you maybe feel like absolutely crap. That's really, really important. And it's the days that, or it's the people that figure out about themselves and learn and are able to show up for themselves on the worst day as best they can are the people who are going to succeed in any venture that they do. You know, whether it is like, you know, the best I can do today is go out, take a walk, and read a book. That's completely mm-hmm. okay. But, you know, everybody's different. And I think the focus on high quality movement combined with your environment and combined with mindfulness is a really effective approach that can benefit almost everyone, regardless of whether you're a musician or a human. And for those of you that have never heard of me before, like definitely go give me a follow on the Functional Musician at Instagram. I also have Functional Musician Perform Without Pain Facebook group as well. So be sure to go check out those resources.
I was just going to ask.
Cool.
Beautiful.
Like perfect. Answered all the questions I had too.
Are you doing any sort of type of programs or just one-on-one currently?
Yeah. So the program that I do is a 90-day program. And during that time, we do work one-on-one. As of right now, there are no other programs that I work on. I have a pretty, intent level of focus with just this program that is also ever adapting and adaptive as more people go through and graduate from the program. But I find that 90 days is it's like the perfect amount of time for whatever reason for any type of health and wellness change. Like, you know, the body probably more than I do because you've been in this business longer than I have, but it just takes some time for the body to change and adapt and build that momentum. So yeah.
Right on. So people can find you at the Functional Musician on Instagram. And where else can they find you again? If somebody wants to get in touch with you.
If you want to find me, honestly, the Functional Musician at anything is, you know, where I'm going to be at. Functionalmusician.com, the Functional Musician Facebook group, Functional Musician LinkedIn, Instagram.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I feel like we just started talking, but
I know that went by so fast.
We should probably do this again and have like part two.
Yeah. Part two. That would be cool. And when we schedule it too, I'll schedule in where I have more than an hour block so we can really dive in. But thanks Jen and Angela for this awesome conversation. Yeah. It was a pleasure to be a part of this podcast.
All right. Thank you so much for coming out and hanging out with us. I mean, really appreciate it.
Yeah. My pleasure.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye.
Okay, bye.